In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. First of all, I want to wish all the fathers in the parish Happy Father's Day. Back in the 70s, I believe it was Gloria Steinem, who's a famous feminist, made the statement that a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle. And that may be true of a single woman, but I can tell you from what I encounter in my secular job every day, that that's not true of a woman who has children. A woman who has children needs a husband, and children certainly need a father. Many of the social problems that we have in our culture today are the result of children being raised without having a father actively involved in their lives. Now, in many cases, this is because they're just irresponsible, but often it's because they've been shut out of their life. In most of those cases, it's because both the mother and the father made the bad decision of not getting married before they had children in the first place. But every child needs two parents. Boys especially need a positive role model of what it needs to be a man. And when they don't have that positive role model, they take all that energy that they have as a male and they put it to work in very negative directions because they don't have any guidance. And they don't have anyone to tell them that that's not the right thing to do. They need a strong hand to correct them and a good model, as I said, to guide them. But girls need a father, too. They need to have a positive role model of what a good husband ought to be like and should be. But they also need someone who's going to love and protect them, particularly in their youth, but even further on in their lives. But also today is the Feast of All Saints of Russia. Father David Mahand, who's Rose's oldest son, who's now a monk at Holy Cross Monastery, he was the first one in the family who embraced the Orthodox faith. And he told me that when he informed his father that he had become Orthodox, his father's only comment was, "Well, that doesn't seem very Texan." But there was a time when being Orthodox was not very Russian. At that time, the people who were called the Rus were a much smaller pagan people. They actually, their leaders at least, were Vikings that came down into the areas and mixed with the Slavic population, but they were a very warlike people, and they had the religion of the Vikings, the Norse gods, although with Slavic names. But when they embraced the Orthodox faith, the church embraced all that was good in the Russian culture, and the Russians made the Orthodox faith their own. Now, you don't find in recorded Russian history that they established a committee and they said, you know what, we need to make Orthodoxy Russian, so how do we need to change this, that, or the other thing? That kind of stuff is never going to result in anything positive. What happened was, is gradually over time, as people allowed Orthodoxy to sink into their souls, they began to express that in their own way, and then the Russian Orthodox Church took its own shape. A common faith with those that brought the faith to them, the Greeks, but a different expression in many respects. There's many peculiar but beautiful aspects of the Russian tradition. And despite devastating invasions from the east, Russian culture began to spread to the north and to the east. Often this was the result of monasticism because monks would be surrounded by people, and then you'd have a monk that would say, I want to follow the example of the desert fathers and go out where there's no people, and establish another monastery and pray, and they would do that. But then what would happen is people would begin to establish a community around that monastery, and eventually that would become a city. And so the Russian people and the Russian culture spread. And as the Russian nation became a more powerful nation, they established seminaries that trained missionaries. And having studied missiology as part of my emphasis in college, I can tell you that they were way ahead of their time in most respects because most missionaries were not particularly interested in learning about the cultures that they went. You literally had European and American missionaries, for example, going to China and assuming that the Chinese were going to learn how to speak their language and would learn the faith that way. And they had no interest in learning the culture. They had no respect for the culture. But what the Russian missionaries did is they went to various tribes in Siberia and eventually into Alaska, and they learned what their beliefs were and what their traditions were. They learned their language. And in most cases, these people didn't have a written language, so they created a written language for them. They wrote a grammar. They would translate the Gospels. They would translate the services. And eventually, those people had their own expression of the faith. And in Russia, there are countless, I wouldn't say countless, but there are numerous languages that are used in the Russian church still to this day by various ethnic groups that had the faith brought to them in exactly this way. And when the Russian missionaries came to Alaska in particular, they saw many good things in the Indian cultures that were there, that were things that they could use to explain to these people the Orthodox faith. And so if you go to Alaska and you visit the various Indian communities there, you'll see things that will look a little bit different than what you see here because they've made that faith their own too. In each case, they embraced what was good in the culture, but as the people embraced the faith, it took on its own expression, and they were transformed by God's grace, and that culture became transformed. Now, when Alaska was sold by the Russian government to the United States, the church didn't pick up and go home. Instead, they saw this as an opportunity, and they actually moved the headquarters of the Russian mission from Sitka, Alaska, to San Francisco, and eventually to New York City. And they began translating the services into English and taking very seriously the need to spread the Orthodox faith. They had two priorities. One, of course, there were many Orthodox people who had come to America seeking better opportunities, but they were in areas where they had no churches. So they were trying to establish churches to meet the needs of these people, but they also saw long-term the opportunity and the goal to reach people who are not Orthodox and to bring them the Orthodox faith. And one of the early efforts that was made was the establishment of an Orthodox church in Galveston, Texas. There was actually an Orthodox lay community in Galveston that goes all the way back to the early 1860s, but they never had a priest. And they petitioned the bishop of North America at that time, Bishop Nicholas, who passed on that request to Tsar Nicholas II. And Tsar Nicholas, with his own money, decreed that there would be a church in Galveston, Texas, and sent money, sent icons, sent the various vessels that they needed in a gospel book. And he also sent a Greek priest by the name of Father Theocletus Triantafylides, who had actually been his tutor as a child. By this time, Father Theocletus was 61 years old, so he was a pretty old man to be starting such an effort. But he took on that with a great deal of zeal, like men much younger than himself might have been able to do, but still would have been worn out. He not only established that parish there, but he was constantly traveling all over the region to find Orthodox people and to serve them. He would go to some small town, and there would be Orthodox people who were there, and he would perform marriages. He would do panakitas for people who had passed away and baptize their children, and then he would go on to the next town. So this parish was established in 1896. In 1900, you had the Great Hurricane, which was the most devastating natural disaster in American history. Thousands of people perished. And during that hurricane, he spent about 30 hours inside the church with people who were seeking shelter, and the church survived, as well as the people inside the church. However, the church was actually knocked off of its foundation by the storm surge and floated about 10 feet away. Now, if I'm remembering correctly, the church was built by people who were shipbuilders, and so they built the church in many ways with the same kind of skills that they had as building a ship, and that proved to come in handy because it floated, but it remained intact. And after the hurricane, they got block and tackle out and donkeys, and they moved the church back to its location, and they did the necessary repairs. And then in 1901, St. Tikhon, the future Patriarch of Moscow, who at that time was the new Bishop of North America, came and he reconsecrated the church. Then in 1911, they established an electric train service between Houston and Galveston. And so you had a lot of Orthodox people in Houston who at that time had no parish whatsoever, but they were able to hop on an electric train. And any time of the day, this train was constantly running back and forth so they could get to the church when they needed to and they could get back home at the end of the day. And so the reach of that parish began to expand. In 1915, there was another devastating hurricane, and this time the church actually floated 50 feet away. And also, the gospel book that Tsar Nicholas had donated floated across the street into the cemetery that's there, for those of you that are familiar with the church. But the gospel book had no damage, despite the fact that it was floating in seawater. And you can go to that church and talk to Father Serge and ask to see that gospel, and you'll see it for yourself. Father Theocletus reposed in 1916, and before he died, he made a request that the church would bury him under the altar of the church. And he made this request because he believed that if he did that, they would never abandon this church. They would always maintain it, and there would be a church there. And his instincts have proven to be true, because that church is still there. My wife and I, when we visited it the first time in the early 1990s, it seemed like it was kind of a dying parish. It had a handful of people who were there, but it wasn't looking in great shape. But I have to say that the current priest has really turned things around there, and it's a really revitalized parish. And also, Father Serge tells me that the Serbian Orthodox Church has the intention of glorifying Father Theocletus as a saint. During his lifetime, people thought of him as a very holy man, and they preserved that memory of him as being a saint. And so we may have a Texas saint in the not-too-distant future. Father Theocletus was, in certain respects, like a seed that was planted in the soil of this state, and all of the parishes, including our own, that you see in Texas today are, to a large extent, the result of his labor, because there would not be an Orthodox present much to speak of had it not been for him putting forth all those hours and traveling by primitive means of transportation at the time all over this region. There is no generic Orthodox faith. You can't just become Orthodox and experience that in some way that's detached from a culture. I am not a Russian, but I am Russian Orthodox. That's the expression of Orthodoxy that was presented to me, and I've embraced it. But that doesn't change the fact that I'm a Texan. We're all united by a common faith, and the Orthodox faith is brought to us by people, and every individual has learned that faith from other people, all of whom have their own locally enculturated expressions of the faith. Most of us in this parish are not Russian, but we need to thank God for the faith that was brought and nurtured in this country, in this state, by Russian people and also by other people. Lots of immigrants added to that planting of the faith in this country. We don't have to be Russian to be an Orthodox Christian. We don't have to be Greek. We don't have to be any other ethnicity. But what we do need to do is we need to make the Orthodox faith real in us. And if we do that, if we make the faith fully our own, we will become bearers of that same faith. And that's how we can make the Orthodox faith Texan, by embracing what's good in our own culture, but being transformed by the faith. And so let us work by doing so to make Texas Orthodox. Amen.